painful diabetic peripheral neuropathy, or diabetic nerve pain. 1 out of 5 people with diabetes has this pain, but many don't talk to their doctors about it. They don't think the pain is connected to their diabetes, may fear what the pain means, or try to deal with it alone. But when I saw my dad was finding ways to work around the pain, I knew he had to do something. Step on up. If you have diabetes and burning, shooting pain in your feet or hands, don't suffer in silence. Have a real conversation with your doctor and take a step towards some pain relief. Visit steponup.com to learn more about your symptoms.
All right, pleasant good morning, everybody. It's coming up on 10 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock. Tom, okay, great. All right, this is very cool. I am so excited here. We've got a special interview on our VIP line, so we're going to go right to it. And with us now is Tom. Tom, are you there?
Yeah, I am here with Louise.
All right. Well, Louise is here. Now, listen, everybody, this is so cool. I'm so excited about this because if anybody out there is a Beatle fan, this is going to be absolutely amazing. Right now, we are with Louise Harrison. All right. Hi, Louise.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. How have you been, darling?
I've been fine. In fact, I was in Chicago just a couple of months ago, and it's good to be back again.
Yes. Now, you had a wonderful childhood growing up because you had a little spunky little brother, didn't you?
Yeah, but better than that was we had the most wonderful parents in the world.
Oh, that's wonderful. And ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Louise Harrison. She is the big sister of George Harrison from the Beatles. That's amazing. I'm so excited to talk to you, Louise.
Well, thank you.
So listen, there's all kinds of questions that I love to ask you here and talk a little bit about. First of all, I got to say, what was it like growing up with George? How was he as a kid?
Well, I never ever talk about how he was as a kid because that was the only time of his life that he had any privacy. So I prefer to let him keep that childhood private.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
I only ever talk about how he was when he became a Beatle because that was the public part of his life. Right. So, you know, he was so delved into once he became a Beatle that, you know, the part of his life that was private just, you know, was so precious that I just never talk about. Now, there was nothing that he ever did when he was a child that I would be ashamed of. He was a lovely little boy. And I was 11 already when he was born. So there was quite a big gap. You know, he was like my baby brother. And I would take him out in the baby carriage for walks around in the parks and everything. And helped him to learn how to talk and all that kind of stuff, you know.
How was it for you as a big sister seeing this whole phenomena take place that was the Beatles? I mean, we never saw anything like that before ever in the history of music.
I know. Well, you know, the funny thing was, I was 11 years older than him. I'd already moved out of the house. I'd moved to this country from Britain, and I'd lived down in South America and all over the place. And I was in the United States back in 1963, and my mum was starting to send me some of the early Beatles singles that were coming out. And being a bit of a ham myself, I started running around all the radio stations and saying, hey, you know, this is my kid brother's band in England, and they're number one in England, and maybe you should be playing them over here. And for the most part, people were looking at me like, what's this woman doing out of the kitchen, you know? That was not the way women were supposed to behave back in 1963. So, and what? People were saying to me, oh, that music, it's terrible. Nobody's ever going to want to listen to that. So I started writing to their manager, Brian Epstein. I would write big, long, 16-page handwritten letters to him every week, explaining to him that he needed to get them onto a better record label because without the backing of some major, major entity, you couldn't get your records played on the, you know, on the radio stations. Because in England, you see, you only had the BBC. And so once you had the record played on the BBC, you had access to the whole country. But over here, back then, they had just about 6,000 radio stations. And to get national play, you had to really do a lot more, jumping through a lot more hoops So I started jumping through those hoops and writing to their manager and telling him what he needed to do to, you know, to break through over here. So I had a very, very busy year in 1963 running around doing that.
So how was your relationship with your brother through those days? I mean, was it something that was just overwhelming as far as the popularity of the Beatles, or was it something that you guys took in stride and just enjoyed it for what it was?
Well, you know, let's face it, nobody had ever gone through that before. And again, let's face it, I grew up during World War II, so I was used to dealing with problems, you know. So the Beatles thing, when it did come along, I was welcoming it because finally I was getting somewhere with, you know, all of the promotion that I'd been doing. And, you know, when I went to New York, spent the time with them when they came to do the Ed Sullivan Show. And it was all very exciting. And, of course, George was sick, too, when they got to New York. So I spent most of the time looking after him in the hotel, you know, giving him medication and stuff to try to get him on his feet in time for the show on Sunday night.
So it was just quite a journey as you travel down the path with the Beatles and George, and of course, one of our greatest artists. I mean, he touched so many people's lives, and it just happened to be.
Oh yes,
it was a tragedy that he passed on at such an early age. I think what, 58 years old he was.
And, yes. Yeah.
It's was it tough for the family as
so
well?
So many of my. Pardon?
I mean, it must have been just incredibly tough on the family and all the relatives and stuff when he passed away. But what happened to your life as a result of George Harrison? Let's talk a little bit about that.
It became very hectic back in those early days because I had been with them in New York. I was, you know, privy to all the stuff that was going on. And there was a lot of nonsense being talked about in the press. And so when I got back to Illinois, I called one of the major radio stations that I had been talking to, you know, back trying to get them to play the records. It was KXOK in St. Louis. And I called them and told them that they were reporting about some crazy bit of information, which was misinformation, actually. Most of the stuff was misinformation. But they were talking about that Ringo had had his hair cut at the British Embassy. And they were misrepresenting it by saying that it was the ambassador's wife that had knocked him down to the floor and cut his hair off, which, of course, was total nonsense.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had called the radio station, and I said, hey, you know, that's not what happened at all. And I told them what really happened. And so the guy there who, you know, he knew me fairly well because I'd been bugging him all year to play Beatle records. And then he called me back, and he said, you know, you're quite right about your brother and his band. He said that this seemed to have made some kind of an impact. And he said, since there's so many crazy stories about them and you'd know what was true, how about doing Beatle reports on them? So I started doing Beatle reports on radio back in February of 1964 or March, around about then. And I did those all over the country on about 21 different radio stations for about 2 years. So, you know, I was very, very much wrapped up in the whole early development of the Beatles.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, I don't know how much you want to get involved with this, but one thing that I wanted to talk about, your brother loved you a lot, okay? We know that. And your brother supported you financially at a point in his life. And then you had some financial difficulties and problems. Do you want to talk about that at all?
No.
Okay. But the thing is that, you know, you're a fighter, all right, and you've come back.
Absolutely.
And,
you know, I'm 84. I can still earn my living.
Exactly. And that's the reason that we want to talk now, is because of the fact that you are going to be doing a book signing, and we want to find out a little bit and talk a little bit about the book that you wrote and what's going on here.
Well, it does, you know, all the things that I've just been talking about are all in the book, of course. And what happened with the book was kind of a silly thing, too. It took me about 4 years to write the book. Initially, all the fans that I've talked to over the years have been begging me to write a book for years and years and years. And I said, no, I don't want to write a book. There's enough books about the Beatles. Anyway, finally, I started writing the book. And I had a literary agent take the book around all the big major book people, you know. And he came back to me after 3 months and he says, you know, but all the reaction I'm getting from is, does she have any nice juicy dirt about the Beatles? And I said, you know, that's not the kind of thing that I'm going to be involved in anyway, you know. So I said, let's forget about writing a book. So the next thing was, there was a guy came to me in Missouri who was a book publisher, just a little mom and pop book publisher. And he wasn't at all interested in any dirt about the Beatles. He just wanted to publish the book. So he published it, and it's out now. But unfortunately, he doesn't really have the resources to, you know, to produce enough books for the demand. And so they're very kind of hard to come by. But I did bring 40 of them with me this weekend. So, you know, hopefully, if there are people that would like them, I do have 40 of them with me.
Okay, now... tell us about a little bit more about the first of all, the name of the book.
Oh, it's called My Kid Brother's Band, also known as the Beatles.
All right, my kid.
You know, see, when I was going around the radio stations in '63, if I'd said the word Beetle, everybody would have thought I was from an exterminating company or something, you know, because nobody had heard the word Beetle in relationship to a band, you know. So
I just said
it was my kid brother's band.
It was funny too.
I gave a copy of the book to Paul McCartney last September. And he looked at the book and he says, "Your kid brother's band."
Exactly.
So, anyway, that's what it's called.
Well, that is wonderful. Now, you're going to be tonight at the Copper Fiddle Distillery in Lake
Copper
Zurich.
Copper Fiddle.
Yes. And yeah. Tom, did you want to chime in on anything about the book signing tonight?
Yes. I want to say thank you to Fred and Jose at Copper Fiddle for having us there tonight. They're up in Lake Zurich on Route 22, and we're looking forward to meeting some Beatle fans and hearing some Beatle music from Chuck and part of his Get Back band, Beatles Tribute Band. And, you know, we're looking forward to meeting the Beatle fans and letting them meet Louise and possibly get a copy of her book. We have a limited supply. So we're going to be there.
I thought we were keeping those for Sunday, Tom.
Yeah,
we'll
have a handful tonight, okay. and then the rest will be at our tribute concert on Sunday. So we'll be at Copper Fiddle from 5 to 7 p.m. today, and then on Sunday we're having a Elvis and Beatles tribute concert at the La Mirage in Rolling Meadows. And the information for that concert can be found on our website, onedaytwolegends.com. And that's all spelled out, O-N-E-T-W-O. And Louise will be there as well to speak to the audience and to share some more of her stories about her life, you know, and her participation in the Beatles' career. And
also, we're going to have a George Harrison lookalike.
Oh, that's right. Louise is bringing her grandson, Tori, who is a spitting image of George. So it's going to be a great photo opportunity for all Beatle fans.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. And by the way, that's going to be at the La Mirage.
He's a wonderful, La Mirage, at Rolling Meadows. That's
what, what's your grandson's...
The thing about my grandson, that not only does he look a lot like his Uncle George, but his personality, like when he first started school and he was in, you know, first grade, there was a little retarded child in the class, and all the other kids used to bully the kid, and Tori was always sticking up for him, was defending the child from the bullies. And then when he grew up and he was living in Springfield, Missouri, and I had bought a house for him and his friends to live in. And he was noticing that there were so many homeless veterans all around the streets during the winter, and he wanted me to put a toilet and a sink in the garage so that he could let the homeless vets go and live in the garage there to the house. So, you know, he has the same compassionate heart as his, great uncle George.
Oh, that is so cool. And Tori's going to be there, and you're going to get a chance to meet him.
And it's almost his birthday. Yeah, he's going to be 25 on Thanksgiving Day.
Wow, and it'd be just like, you would think you'd be just looking at George, wouldn't you, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. By the way, for people, information here, the La Mirage is located at 3223 West Algonquin Road in Rolling Meadows. There's a 5 p.m. meet and greet, 6 p.m. dinner and screening, and then the 7 o'clock concert. And you can call Tom. Tom, do you want me to give a phone number over the air? Is that all right?
That is okay.
If anybody wants additional information and wants to talk to Tom, the number to call about either of the events is 847-445-7522. So once again, that's 847-445-7522. Well, I tell you what, Louise, my goodness, you sound like you're about like 50 years old, hon. You sound like you're just...
Well, let's face it, you know, we're supposed to be eternal, and so the eternal spirit is always young, so I never ever intend to grow old. It's just the years, I've been 84 years on the planet, but that has nothing to do with age.
Oh, yes. And I tell you what a wonderful contribution your son has made to the music world, and he will never, ever, ever, your brother has made to the music
My
world.
My brother, yeah.
Yep, and he will never, never be forgotten. Which is just amazing. His music,
certainly not by me, anyway.
Lives on forever and ever and ever.
Okay.
So is there anything else, any special moments during the Beatles' time that were crazy or really insane? Any last story you want to leave us with?
Well, instead of the last story to leave you with, what I'd like to say is that I'm looking forward to meeting many of the Chicago Beatle people because, for me, all of the Beatle fans in the world have become my extended family, and many, many people call me the global mum. So I want to, see as many of my family members here and give them a Lou Harrison, a Harrison hug, and chat to them for a little while. I do have some pictures of George and I. I know I don't have many books, but I do have some photographs, some really nice photos of George and some pictures of George and I as well that, people can get and I can sign for them. So I hope to see, a lot of my Beatle family while I'm here.
All right. Very cool. So we hope everybody, if they get a chance, to come on out and see you tonight. That's at the Copper Fiddle Distillery in Lake Zurich, and it's 532 West Illinois Route 22, just east of Rand Road. Well, Louise, it's been a pleasure, my dear, reminiscing and talking about your wonderful brother and your family and stuff, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today here on our radio station. We appreciate it very much.
Okay, thank you, and my love go out to all of my Beatle family.
All right, very cool. And Tom, thank you for talking with us today, getting this set up, and have a great weekend, all right?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Okay.
Bye, Louise.
Thank you, bye.
All right. So, Dave, what do you think of that, man?
That was pretty cool.
That's all right.
Cool. Yeah.
I tell you what.
I think it was...
84 years old? Sounds like she's like 50.
Yeah.
Four.
Yeah.
I went on and Googled her on... the internet here and saw she's looking really good for her age.
For her age, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And to be going out, my mom is younger, but to go out on a Friday and a Saturday in the same weekend, my mom wouldn't do it. She couldn't do it.
What a schedule she's got. I mean, man, 84 years old, she's going to the Copper Distillery, and then they're having the Legends. Oh, the one thing I forgot to ask. That actually did take place. Didn't
it? The night?
Yes, when the Beatles played with Elvis.
Right, right. They were out in California, and Elvis was staying out there for a while, maybe doing movies, who knows. And the Beatles and Elvis, they wanted to get together, so a couple limos pulled up, and the Beatles walked out and sat down and spent a few hours with Elvis. And unlike the Million Dollar Quartet, where there's no film of it, there is a film. Elvis's helper, handler, Joe Esposito, filmed some of it.
Well, I bet it's on YouTube or something.
I'm sure somewhere. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's
but it,
cool.
I mean, and then the logo for the Elvis and the Beatles getting together. You know the Abbey Road album cover with the Beatles walking across the street. It's a silhouette of the Beatles walking across the street, and you've got Elvis doing a gyration in front of the Beatles. it's a great, great picture. So all check it out. Tonight at the Copper Fiddle.
I'll tell you what.
Sunday in Rolling Meadows.
They're diehard Beatles fans.
Oh, yeah.
To this day.
Yeah.
Absolute diehard fans that still, even to this day.
I think it was this spring. This spring, the Mercy Beatles, the only Beatles tribute band from Liverpool, born and raised in Liverpool, they performed at the Hemmings, one of their first North American dates. And John Lennon's sister, Julia, was there. And having her in studio with the three out of the four Beatles, Ringo couldn't make it. It was cool to meet her and talk to her, and it was great listening to you and Louise go back and forth. And unfortunately, John and George are gone, but their music, like you said, will live on forever.
Forever. And you know what? It was funny. She was talking about the Ed Sullivan Show. To this day, it is still one of that program with the Beatles is still one of the biggest viewed television shows ever.
Ever, yeah.
And there was, and half the people in this country didn't even have
TVs,
but it was viewed by 73 million people. You know, that's more than most of the Super Bowls.
Right, right, yeah.
I mean, and I don't think any Super Bowl has ever got that big of an audience.
Think about how the times were back then. It was TV. No phones, no computers, no little iPods.
Rabbit ears.
And, yeah, tinfoil. And, you know, you sat around a 15-inch, 16-inch black and white TV. And you watch TV as a family. And for you younger folks, you had to get up to change the channel and increase the volume.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But then again, you only had to change it maybe three times.
Yep.
There was
NBC,
only
CBS,
CBS, three channels. Yeah. That's it. All right. I remember
there was a lot on then, unlike today where there's 400 channels
and nothing ever
anything
on.
To watch. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why you end up watching.
I missed the Ray Rayner show.
Yeah. Ray Rayner, Bozo.
Bozo Circus.
I was on Bozo three times.
Garfield Goose. Mm-hmm. Remember Garfield Goose? I wanted to play the grand prize game. I used to take buckets out of the kitchen and ping pong balls and try to throw them in.
This is probably 8-9 years ago.
Remember Romper Room?
Oh, yeah.
Miss Elizabeth would say my name. And, she would see me.
About 8-9 years ago, Ringmaster Ned's nephew was going to do a show at the Hemmings, and it ended up being canceled. But I got to talk to Bozo, Larry Harmon. He had the voice of Bozo and everything. I got to interview Bozo, and it was awesome. And I got to ask him about how come I didn't get to play in the team game. And he apologized. He goes, you know, Dave, I've been meaning to call you for 30 years and apologize to you.
Well, that's
they
a good
ran
man.
Long. They ran long. And it's like, I got an apology from Bozo.
That was when people liked clowns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The good old days. Hey. All right. Well, listen, we got to take a short little break and then we're going to come back with more. Boy, I tell you what, that was fun. I enjoyed that. Oh, that was just
wow,
absolutely
gently weeps.